you. It is an amazing space. Welcome back, Nick. I have not seen you, and I've been very happy.
Tell the truth to everybody. I was just on strike, and you refused to do a show until I came back. But now that I'm getting paid absolutely nothing, Rocco, which is more than last time,
you please. We're
back. I think he got a little bored and actually wanted to come back a little bit sooner, but we got delayed due to the construction in the new building here at 303 East Wacker.
You should have hired Stage 2 Properties to do
that. Whoa, whoa,
over timeline.
Over budget,
over timeline. This guy's bulldozing us.
Okay, you guys are the guests. We're the host.
Sorry.
Don't worry.
We will shut up.
We will get you. We'll get you in there, bro.
Oh, man.
You know what?
This is what it's
going to
be like here at the new studio.
Let's just rip right into it then, huh?
Let's get into it.
Well, since you guys are already introducing yourselves,
why don't you just let them introduce themselves?
Let's start from the left and go to the right. We have two guests here today from Stage 2 Properties, Colin Egglesfield. And, well, from the left is Tyler Neitzel, and to the right is Colin Egglesfield. How you doing, guys?
Great. How are you guys doing?
So what we do, good, thank you, and full of energy today. Thank you again. What we do here is we typically let you guys tell a little something about yourself, a little background, and then lead your way into how you're doing what you're doing now. So we'll start with you, Tyler.
Okay. My name is Tyler Neitzel.
Up a little to the mic.
My name is Tyler Neitzel, originally from San Diego, California. Moved to Los Angeles with my family when I was 9 for acting, actually. My older brother, older sister, and I were all child actors, like the epitome of child actors, like on set from the time I was 5 years old, professionally managed, represented at 7, doing TV by 12, doing movies by 16. And then when I was 18,
Kill the wolf in 300?
Yeah, I was getting.
I know he looks
that,
familiar.
Colin. I was getting. No, I'm kidding.
You look so familiar.
Yeah, the movie 300. I was the kid in the snow that killed the wolf.
You look
the
familiar.
Spear
he was a young
whole,
Leonidas.
Whole thing. Yeah,
you
young
go.
King Leonidas.
There you go.
I remember that.
That will forever be. I mean, the coolest thing I've ever done.
You definitely didn't look like the Persian king, but you know. But I put you
as
the wolf kid. Yeah, the wolf kid for sure.
And I did that when I was like 16, and I continued acting until my early 20s. But at 18, I was in college for 3 weeks. I decided to drop out. It wasn't for me, and I started my first business. And I just started businesses between 18, 19, 20, 21 years old. That's when I found real estate. I was sitting on the couch watching a TV show about restaurant space because my buddy wanted to open up some restaurant franchise in LA, and a real estate flipping show came on, and I was watching this couple flip real estate, and I was like, I could do that.
Oh,
I could probably do that. So I Googled it, how to flip houses, and then you go to these like seminars and they try to charge you a lot of money, but you can go for free for a while before they start charging you a lot of money. And so I started networking, worked for a family friend who was flipping houses in Southern California at the time. And then Colin and I linked up, and that's when we figured out that we were both very interested in real estate. So we started Stage 2 Properties together. And so then the story continues, but I'll let Colin take it.
Yeah, let's let Colin talk here a little bit.
Let's get to Colin.
Tyler is a lot more confident about the whole real estate thing. I just kind of was like, you know what? My acting career is it's going not so great at the moment. You know, with acting, I've been acting for about 20 years. Never thought I'd actually be doing this. I grew up in the south suburbs of Chicago, Crete, Moni area. Went to University of Iowa, thought I was going to go to medical school, ended up majoring in biology pre-med, took the MCAT, and right before I graduated, I entered into this model search thingy or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up in Milan, Italy, and doing runway shows and all this like fun, crazy stuff, and I figured...
Did you have dinner with Elton John on numerous occasions?
You know,
just to throw
I did,
it right
Tyler.
Back at you. Wow.
Yeah, you know, we're
How
best friends.
That?
Oh, he's doing great. I was just at his villa this past weekend in Lake Como. But other than that...
I think this is like the best, because it's typically Nick who just can't get over himself.
I'm just...
This is a real estate show, so I'm watching this.
So I built Elton John's doghouse, mm-hmm. and I was like, wow, you know, just one of these like IKEA things. No, totally kidding. But I ended up in Los Angeles after being in New York City for a while, jumped into acting, fell in love with it, caught the acting bug. Like I said, was in Los Angeles, ran into Tyler in an acting class about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And you know, with acting, it's very up and down. You'll work for a while and then you'll go stretches without work. So I knew I needed to do something in between my acting jobs. Otherwise I was going to go crazy. Started talking to Tyler about some stuff, and we both have an entrepreneurial background, and the subject of real estate came up, And just by happenstance, I was at home, saw on Facebook for this ad for, you know, I don't know if you've heard of Tarek and Christina, Flip or Flop.
Yeah. Yep.
So I saw one of the ads for, they do these educational programs where you go and you learn how to flip houses. And it's, you know, it's like you go to this weekend seminar and they talk about like just the basics of real estate. And then if you want to really get into it, you can take like the whole dive in and spend, you know, a crap load of money. Yeah. And I figured, you know what, if I was going to spend this amount of money going to medical school, I might as well spend like a fraction of that to actually learn how to do real estate. So we jumped in, and 3.5 years later, we've rehabbed, what, 6 houses.
Six.
We're on our 7th and 8th. We have 4 rental properties. We've failed. We've succeeded. We've made huge mistakes. We've had
You sound like actors.
A lot like acting.
Now I got to back you up because you probably don't remember this, but it's a long time ago. I actually met you at that model search.
What?
Oh, you were the guy that like
I was
took
speaking.
That spot in front of me. And you were the model.
You were the guy who didn't make
so,
it.
And the only reason I remember you, no, I was actually speaking when he was actually coming. He was coming into the industry when I was actually getting out of the industry. Like, and so the reason I remember you briefly is because you became friends with some of the other models that I used to keep, the Kings, Stephanie, and whatnot. And then one day, you know, and we all break apart and don't see each other and all that stuff. And then one day I'm watching TV and one of our favorite shows, Grokko, was Nip Tuck.
Yeah.
And then you're on the screen and I'm like, I know this dude from somewhere. And it freaked me out for a second. I'm like, how do I? And then, but, you know, you don't associate modeling with acting right away. I remember the model briefly. And then I called up somebody else and they're like, yeah, that's Colin. I'm like, oh, and there we are.
Yeah.
So
small world.
But I was at that model search. Yeah.
So, gentlemen, why don't we take this over to some real estate talk so that everybody who's watching today can get some insight as to what's trending in the market. After all, we are a real estate show.
Oh, yeah.
Shit. I thought this was a fashion.
You're welcome. Yeah. You know.
Carla's here.
Go ahead. Can I do this now? So there's a lot of talk, right, about this, like, bubble, right? Everybody's getting into the market. There seems to be an inflation, especially in this market now in the summer months, where everybody can't seem to find properties. There's a shortage of inventory. Mm-hmm. So there's obviously escalating values. And so a lot of people, you know, like, your average consumer who maybe is making $60,000 a year, what have you, doesn't find that product, right? Because people are sitting on it, interest rates are still very low, and people are still holding on to their products. So everybody seems to think that there is this inflation bubble, like something's going to have to give. And we're seeing a lot of people where properties are switching hands without, you know, 3 or 4 times before it makes it to the end consumer. And so we're getting people like yourselves who are taking advantage of this market and are coming in and flipping properties. So having said that about the market, what really motivated you to get into the real estate business, and how are you taking advantage of it?
We just saw so many people getting into it, and we saw that there was a lot of opportunity. We living in California, we tried to look at doing it in Los Angeles, but the price points there are like 5 times of what they are here just to get into a property. Like here, you can get into a house for $50,000, put 50 to 70 into it, and then exit out at 170 to 180, you know, upwards of 200,000.
20 minutes south of downtown. In LA, you'd have to go hours outside, you know, of LA property.
Yeah, the same 3-bed, 2-bath house here in Chicago for $50,000 to $70,000 is like $300,000 to $400,000. And then you got to put another $70,000 into it just to make $30,000.
Yeah, you're looking like an 8 to 10% profit margin, and you're risking a lot of money. You know,
right, so there, you're looking at cities like this, Chicago being more of a, the acquisition is a little bit more reasonable.
Yep.
It's a great place, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, to flip houses in terms of margin and, yeah.
A lot of economists are saying that, you know, don't get into real estate when everybody else is getting into it. Don't buy just because everybody's getting into it, or, you know, you're an investor, you're flipping.
No.
So what do you say to that?
Yeah, it's all about just buying a property at the right price.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the market is doing, as long as you get into a property at the right price and you know that you're giving yourself you can't really tell what 6 months down the road is going to be, and that's why getting into these bigger properties now that we are getting into, we're getting a little more speculative. But at the same time, we feel like there's enough margin in the properties that we get into that even if there is a pullback, we still are
safe.
We're safe.
And how often do you plan on like the scenario where, like, if you have to rent it? Because sometimes you have to look at a property, like, what if this thing doesn't move? What can we do with it? Is there a contingency plan? Because that's one thing that we try to teach people that listen to our show, because flipping does go bad once in a while. We see it.
Yeah.
we think everyone else is going to see it, and we've all been caught in a project that just isn't moving once in a while. But how often is that part of the dynamic of what you guys are doing?
You know, it's always in the back of your mind, what the worst
like
case
worst
scenario
case scenario
might
we could
be.
Rent it out.
Yeah,
still
but we've never run into the worst case scenario and ended up renting it out. Good. You know, we've run into a bad scenario and then ended up selling it. Right. You know, at no profit. You know, yeah. That's one thing. You go back to your financiers and you say, hey, didn't make any money on this, but we've got three other houses that we're working on right now. Where are you going to make money? We'd rather do that in identifying, you know, potential properties to flip and in identifying potential properties to hold on to for 5 to 10 years to cash flow. It's a completely different business model for us. Yeah. So to transition that, yeah, some people might say, hey, the best thing to do here would just be to refinance it, put some tenants in it and hold on to it. We haven't executed that play yet. But I want to expand on what Colin was saying earlier to get back to your question, Carla, about that macro market. What do you say when people are all getting into real estate? Why would you get into it too? There is no 10-year period since we've been recording real estate values in the United States where real estate's been worth less at the end of 10 years than before. So if you're looking at it in a long-term strategy, and that includes the Great Depression. It's surprising, but that could this wave right now of appreciation, we're at like year 8, right? Could this be the first time that it happens? Sure, but if you're looking at it as a long term strategy, then as long as you're acquiring a good price, like Colin said, you're bringing projects in on schedule and on budget, you're able to force appreciation and bring value to your company.
And I love that you say that about the Great Depression, right? Because a lot of the economists are alluring to that fact. It's like, okay, we're in year 2018, 2020. What are we speculating? You know, with the prices and inflation being so high, and then also job growth not, you know, equaling to that, and people just being priced out of the market. Your average consumer is getting priced out of the market, and we are creating product for the end consumer. So that's where, you know, a lot of people are fearful to get into the business, but you're coming in at one of the hottest time in the market, and you're saying we're going to take advantage of that, and you're doing it successfully. So for that investor that's like a first-time investor that it's seeing us and it's saying, okay, you guys are reaping the benefits of this, how can I get started? So share your story as to how you got started.
Yeah, so just to clarify too, when I got into it 5 years ago, it wasn't the market that we're looking at today. And when we brought our business to Chicago from Los Angeles, it wasn't the market we're looking at today. The houses that we were picking up for $45,000 are now going for what, $65,000-$70,000. Yeah. I mean, the margins for investors are shrinking. Chicago, right. Cook County issued, 2,000 building permits last year, which is a record number. Everyone heard that the South Side is lucrative, so we're down there buying properties for $45,000 to $60,000, and then all of a sudden we're like, oh, wait, why is this property going for $60,000 to $70,000 now? Yeah. Well, now we need to get into multi-unit. Now we need to look at, you know, a longer-term play. Now we need to expand from the South Side into the Northwest, right? Areas like Portage, Jefferson, Irving, Mayfair, those areas where there's still room to grow and there's still a profit margin for investors. So it's sort of, you know, been a diversification over the last few months, I guess, since September, since we started realizing that we're going to get priced out, you know, of that.
And I love that you're mentioning those neighborhoods, right? Because we're from Chicago, and so you have a lot of people who are natives of Chicago, and they're not taking advantage of this per se boom or opportunity in real estate. And you're looking at different neighborhoods, right? So you're talking about the South Side. Obviously, a lot of people will say the higher the risk, the higher the investment, right? That you're going to get better yields. I, in particular, did invest in South Shore, and also I'm in Dalton now. We're doing a flip there. Their acquisition was really low. It's about $40,000, and we're into it $62,000 with an after repair value of about $160,000. So as long as the product comes back on the market in time, we'll be fine. But you're finding that permits and all that jazz also delays the process. I love the fact that you mentioned some areas in the north side of Chicago. I actually was working with an investor who's actually looking into these neighborhoods, and we're looking at the near west side with the June average increase per versus prior year at 16% increase. But the acquisition in these neighborhoods are going to be at a higher level, $535,000 for a multi-unit there. Hermosa is also showing at 12% increase versus a year ago, but the acquisition there starts at $333,000 on an average. Humboldt Park, ladies and gentlemen, everybody's gravitating to the south side of Humboldt Park, and that's a 13% increase versus a year ago. And the acquisition cost there is $271,000 for a two-flat, meaning that if you're just going to do some, you know, cosmetic lipstick surgery, as I like to say it, and you're going to actually be an end user, this is a great area for you to start and, you know, know, use it so that it can comfort some of that income so that you don't have to absorb the entire mortgage payment yourself. Mm-hmm. Uptown is at a 62% increase versus a year ago. However, the acquisition in Uptown is $1.37 million. So, again, you're looking at these numbers and you're like, where do I start, right? Do I have that kind of cash and where can I start? Finally, Albany Park, 44% at a $464,000 average. Mm-hmm. Avondale, which is where everybody's going to, mm-hmm. and you cannot follow everybody. Look at your numbers and make sure they make sense for you on a monthly basis. It's $558,000 to get into this neighborhood on an average for a two-flat. Increase over a year ago was 20%. So I'm glad that you're looking at those numbers because you have to look at it from an analytics point of view.
Those numbers are all great, but there's a problem. More and more people are taking on debt. So the affordability to afford these great neighborhoods and these properties is going to get a lot harder. So their model is an amazing model because everybody can afford it, pretty much. You know, whether you're middle of the road or whether you're just a first-time buyer, that model is always going to be safer than somebody who's going after a $200,000, $300,000 multi-unit that needs repairs. And we're seeing more and more that people are just leveraging more and more debt. And
well, I think that's the biggest concern, and that's what economists are fearful of, is the fact that people are taking so much debt, and now we're qualifying people who don't even qualify. So you're basically saying...
Yeah, we're back to stated income loans.
Exactly. Well, mm-hmm.
They're back.
No, we are. No, we are. Yeah,
well, I get emails also, all the time from... A lot of people are fearful that whenever they roll out these type of products, it's when you're creating like a situation where you want everybody to qualify, and so you're getting people into the market that don't necessarily qualify, and I don't need to be an elitist about it, but at the end of the day, it's like that's what kind of upsets the market. And
I totally understand what you're saying, but I think that there's a give and take, and I think that's a balancing act that needs to happen. I think as some of the Dodd-Frank Act, you know, all those the rules and regulations are being repealed, there needs to be something that bridges that gap and comes back. We give a little bit of freedom, and then we take a little bit of it away, give it a little bit more, take a little bit of it away. But I really think that we learned our lesson as a country, right? In 2008, 2009.
Capitalist society, I don't think that we learned
anything.
It takes
years and years and years of no regulations to get back to a position like that. So a couple of years, you know, and a couple of regulations being rolled back is not going to be the end of the world. That's my opinion.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Carly, in the answer to your question, for advice to someone who is getting started, where to start. Mm. I think the danger of what happened with us was going to these seminars. There are so many different aspects to getting involved in or getting started with real estate. Wholesaling, buy and holds, rehabbing, and when it's presented to you in this like kind of frenzied fashion of you can do it and just start
like
making offers
like a great
and
new
then
diet pill.
Get into the property and the money will find you and all this these kind of risky speculative strategies. We just kind of threw out this big net. We're like, okay, South Side, California, you know, buy and holds. What like we just kind of started throwing everything out there. And we got into a position where we were making offers on properties in areas where we didn't really know that well. So my advice to someone who's just getting started, focus on one area first. Just start to get to know that area really well. Just start driving the neighborhood. See
like
what properties
literally
are
10
there.
Square blocks.
Yeah.
Like no more than that.
Start
like we're not talking about
talking
one
to,
market
right,
or one neighborhood.
Talking real estate.
We're talking about sub-neighborhood. Right.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Especially
don't
in the south side of Chicago,
tiny,
block by block.
Yeah.
Start talking to real estate agents in those areas that know those areas well.
Get out of your car and walk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Start just investigating the price points and seeing what areas are you comfortable with. Some areas in the south side of Chicago, they're not necessarily the best places to be after 6 o'clock in the evening. And we bought properties in those areas without necessarily really knowing that.
Did you have your furniture stolen yet?
We've had
all of our furniture stolen.
I've done projects out there, and I've had furniture stolen, toilets stolen.
Yeah.
It's like,
I just had
the copper out of his fillings.
All the appliances were stolen at one of our current listings.
Yeah, that happened. Our first house that we were flipping, and the next day we were on the phone. Every other house that we owned had an alarm system.
It's not just the South Side.
I mean, if you're going to go into a high risk, high reward neighborhood, like we've been talking about, then you should take the next necessary precautions to protect yourself.
Yeah.
It's kind of a given, but I appreciate that you're saying. Well, you would say it was a given,
but
that's true.
Yeah.
I would also say join your local real estate investment group for that area. Yeah. And don't buy any properties until you find some sort of mentor or someone who knows that area like the back of their hand that can help you hold your hand walking through that whole process, because there's a lot of different moving parts. There's getting into it at the right price where you think you're getting it, and you're comping a property where you're using comps that are maybe three blocks away, but if it's like on the other side of a major road,
it could be completely different.
Completely different township, and you may be comping and using the wrong, you know, properties.
School districts really change the value.
And I kind of know who your mentor is, because he's sort of like my really good friend as well. So, but I just want to add to that. It is very true, because in Chicago, one block is going to be completely different than the next block. And if you're looking like, I don't know, like when you're pricing out, not necessarily pricing out, when you're scoping out a good opportunity, if you're looking at a single family, sometimes you don't want to be next to that two flat, right? Because there's too much transition, and the mom or parents, because it's catering to that. Or not? Are we violating any rules here? But you know, when you're the end user is not going to want to be next to a transient type of building when you're looking at a single family. In some neighborhoods, you have like boarded up homes in the block next door, and so you have to be wary of that as well.
Yeah.
But what do you say to someone who's saying, "Okay, there's no inventory, there's no opportunity." So what do you mean you're taking your time to do all this research?
You mean to another investor, somebody that's trying to get into?
Right.
There's inventory. I mean, what a lot of people don't know is that there's still a lot of REO properties coming on the market at auction that, you know, there is a strategy to the auction process, and that I'm still learning that process. But like Tyler was saying, the properties that we were getting into even 2 years ago are now 20% more expensive than they were. And so the strategy that the president of our real estate investment group that we belong to, Andrew Holmes, with Chicago Real Estate Investment Group, he's a big advocate of using the auctions to get into properties. And his strategy is long-term buy and hold. Single-family homes in areas where there's going to be appreciation, and they're in areas where the homeowner, the renter, acts like a homeowner in the sense that they have that pride of ownership. Mm-hmm. And when you get into the multi-unit space, it's a little trickier, because you got to make sure that you get the right tenants into those properties. But For the most part, if you are in the right areas, you know, it can be successful.
So back to renting.
Exactly.
Get it?
So, but in terms of finding inventory when it seems like there's none, I mean, it sounds silly, but we found a lot of our projects right off the MLS, right off of Redfin. I mean, it sounds silly, but you should know every single house that's bought and every single house that's sold, every single house that comes to market. Your Redfin alerts or Realtor.com alerts, everything should go directly to your phone. You should be willing to call that listing agent within 5 minutes of hitting the MLS. You need to be willing to go to that house that day. You need to be on every single wholesaler's list. You need to, you know, if you're the type to put up bandit signs because you don't want to pay a wholesaler between $2,500 and $5,000 to find a property for you because you think that you want to do it yourself, then you should be willing to do that, right? You should be willing to give your business cards to everybody on the block when you're flipping a house and tell them that if they're ever trying to sell their house, you'd be willing to take it off their hands and renovate it into a beautiful home for a new family, right? Like, you should be doing everything in your power to hustle your way to the next deal. It doesn't matter what market you're in, there's always going to be opportunity. You just have to find it. So,
but look at that. I mean, there's no way Nick can get away with doing that stuff. He's not as cute as you guys. I mean, I get it. People answer the door.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Knock.
We just knock on the door and.
All right. I got some questions here, because we're veering off our bullet point here, guys.
Adding up.
This is a 30-40 minute show. We're like
explode around you, dude. You're gonna have some problems in a little bit. Just wait.
Wait. You said you were gonna be nice to me.
No, I did not say that.
Did he not?
No, you wished I would be nice to you.
So,
children.
One of the cool things that you guys do, obviously, is you go into these up-and-coming neighborhoods, right? And I want you guys to touch a little bit about Stage 2 properties and how you guys give second opportunities to people that need it, right? People that have maybe entered our system, call it, and they need a second chance. And you guys do that with helping out on these renovations, whether it be assisting, you know, the carpentry or the tradements on electricals. Touch a little bit about that, if you will, on how you guys came about that, because that's a pretty cool feature you guys have.
Yeah, so we kind of just fell into this whole, space of being in the South Side of Chicago, where we met a couple of contractors who hire former gang members and formerly incarcerated individuals who just haven't been able to get employment because of that, you know, felony on their record or what have you. And, you know, we've been, I don't want to say that that is our whole business model and that's all of what Stage 2 Properties is. We are a big advocate of redeveloping communities, and our big mission of who we are and what we stand for is trying to help revitalize some of these communities. But it takes a lot of combined efforts from a lot of different organizations who I feel like now we're aligning ourselves with, like housing neighborhood services and starting to meet aldermen and city council people to find out how we can actually get into some commercial space and start to try to revitalize some of the these areas by getting, you know, creating not only the residential market, but also
retail
space, the retail space and that sort of thing. So we're still trying to figure that out in the sense of from a macro level, but on just like what you were touching on with what we've done so far is, we've had former gang members help rehab our houses, and these guys are incredible and amazing, and just to hear some of their stories and what they've overcome in terms of having gone through the whole gang system and gone through prison and saying that, you know, if it wasn't for this job, they would either be dead or in jail.
So question. So does the concept of Stage 2 Properties start with that in mind before you get started, or did that just evolve while you're on the job? You're like, you run into some good people and you're like, you know what? Yeah, he had a rough upbringing, but let's take a crack on this guy. And then it worked. So you tried another person, you tried another person, and then it evolved. Was it first or after you started doing flips?
Good question. The latter. So we were investing from Los Angeles for the first 6 to 9 months. And as we started coming out here more and more, spending more time at the job sites and talking to the guys and getting to know the people that were actually doing the work on the jobs, we started to hear their life stories. And that's what Colin was saying. About just the obstacles they've overcome. A lot of these guys started getting wrapped up in the system as young as 16, 17, 18 years old. They've got a record coming out of jail, coming out of prison by, 22 years old. And then we figured out, we discovered that this job meant so much more to them than we thought it did.
It wasn't
we
the money, thought, it was getting their life back on track.
Exactly. Yeah, it gave them a sense of purpose. And we actually, we've done a bunch of interviews because we were working with a TV producer in Los Angeles for a little while that wanted to highlight what we were doing here with these guys. Mm-hmm. And so we got to interview these guys and get to know them on a deeper level. And Stefan was talking to us about getting to, you know, instead of just goofing around or gangbanging is what he called it. You know, I don't want to say, oh, gangbanging, but like instead of just gangbanging with his friends and this and that and buying drugs or weapons or whatever, reselling them on the streets, he was getting up every day and going to a home that's in a community that he believes in. You know, in a place where his family's from or he's from, his friends are from, and they would see him getting up to go to work to do demolition or learn about carpentry or come work on our jobs. And then his friends and his family were taking notice and they were saying, wow, like, how do we get involved in this? And so it was, you know, it was really inspiring.
And he would say that his long-term goal was to own his own construction company where then he could hire, you know, people in the community to be able to do what he's doing currently. Yeah.
That's awesome. Because who would know the neighborhood better than him, though?
Exactly.
Yeah. Nobody.
Yeah.
Not even you guys that are working there. So.
It really was, we leaned into that and we tried to start helping from the inside out.
So it was a post.
Yeah.
Article. I guess our whole concept is to grow our business so that we're able to hire more of those contractors who are then providing those opportunities for people in those areas.
Well, at the end of the day, the person buying the home, I don't want to sound shallow here, but a homeowner or someone buying a home doesn't really care how it got there, just how it is when it is there. You know, and so there's the fact that you're helping people along the way and building some confidence and contributing to the neighborhood is a huge plus, much like any corporation that would do charity work. At the end of the day, it's like helping hands is what charity work is. So, and in this case, you're giving people an opportunity, which is a helping hand. And I think that the homeowner or the potential buyer, if the quality of the work is good, that's all that matters to them.
Yeah.
Like, that's really the end all. You know, what's the price and do I like the job they did or not? Mm-hmm. Everything else is a backstory that's irrelevant to them and their finances now.
Yeah.
Well, at the end of the day, you guys are like, you know, you're overseeing the project, so you're actually revitalizing the neighborhood, mm-hmm. and also giving, you know, giving people opportunity to work.
Say that again.
Revitalizing.
Can we get into the nitro question, because we're running short on time?
Yep. Oops. Okay, so the nitro question is usually a question that sometimes has nothing to do with anything or whatever the case is. So there's two of you. Now, all things considered, we're going to give you each a nitro question, but we're going to give you one nitro question, and I'll let you pick who wants to do which one. I'm going to give you one nitro question that is related to your current industry.
Nitro question.
Oh, no, just because I don't even know the question yet. It's like,
isn't the question right here, though?
He's thinking it as he's asking it.
I think we have the question. Carla wrote it out here, so.
Oh, Carla did.
Somebody's trying to write my nitro questions
down?
Bro, here's your freaking script, bro. Not in a million years. Never will someone write my
nitro question. I love this nitro question.
I'm not even doing that shit.
Okay. You know, we're supposed to keep the show to like a specific time format.
Yeah, here's your nitro questions. One's going to get a nitro question of the industry, and one's going to get a nitro question from the old industry, well, the industry that you're coming from.
Who wants to take a nitro question
from the old industry or from the previous and the current?
I'll take Hollywood. I'll take
real. You take Hollywood?
I'll take Hollywood.
Hollywood, all right. We need to know. Your nitro question is, we need to know one of the most embarrassing experiences that you've ever had during your Hollywood career. So nitro question doesn't have to be really, really relevant. You're going to get something a little bit more relevant.
Okay, so...
You don't have to answer yet. You have to hold on there for about 10 or 15 minutes. Let it marinate.
Actually,
think of a good one.
Wow. 2 minutes, because we're running a little low on time here.
Okay, we'll get there. Okay. All right, you got the industry question. If you can start all over again doing what you're doing, because it's been, what, a couple years?
Yeah, 5 in total, 3.5 years.
3.5 years. Okay, 5 in total. If you could start from day one again, what is the biggest mistake or thing you would correct moving forward? We all learn, right? So something you're just like, if I can get that one back, I would do it again. So park on that, think about it, and better be good.
I got an answer for that.
I got an answer already.
My answer to that would be like, say no to Carla Mina in a talk show idea. That's what my answer would be. That would be my rewind
to
2000.
Well, that's marinating really quick. I want to thank these guys too, because they're helping us out with our St. Jude push this calendar year. So it's very important that we give back to some degree.
Colin participates in the triathlon in South Beach, Miami every year.
Triathlon.
And Colin comes and cheers me on. He does his own triathlon.
Yeah.
It's a margarita.
It's a shot of beer and a margarita.
That's
before
my kind of
noon,
triathlon.
And I sit there and cheer him on. So
I'm totally good with the triathlon. I just don't like the running part, the swimming part.
And the cycling
and the
part.
And the other part really kicks my ass, too. So.
I'm really excited about our event, though. Can you plug our event? Because I'm totally going to be
rolling. July 22nd. It's a Sunday. From 1 to 4 p.m., we're going to be over at Mode Body Boutique hosting our Global Warrior Fitness Challenge. It's going to be a rowing challenge, a cycling challenge, and a push-up challenge. And we're going to see if we can get Nick on the bench press, too, on the bench press challenge.
Wait, so we need groups of individual participants or teams. So,
we do.
Hey, Nick, do you want to be on my team?
I'm going to bench press you, which is really easy.
No, it's
so, yeah,
not.
Make sure you guys reach out to us on social media or call us, text us. But we'd like you guys to come out on that day to register, whether it's a team event, team of three, or you can do individual challenges. So hopefully you guys can make that outing as well.
Yeah. Where can people go online to donate to St. Jude?
They can go to, I don't know, our direct site.
Can you inbox us for that information?
Yeah,
that we'll definitely provide it.
We have our own separate Global Warrior site, but you can go directly to stjude.com if need be. But we would prefer that we all come together.
Individual.
Just invite your friends to come to the event, and that we'll give them more information then.
Yeah, we have a promo running at the moment, so it's out there. But let's get back to the nitro question so we can wrap up.
Why are you always making fun of him? Give
Who?
Him his moment.
Time
Who are you laughing
I'm not
right
making
now?
Fun of him.
Oh.
I'm making fun of you.
All right,
we're already. Well, I mean, we can finish off.
No, we're actually out of time, so let's get this nitro question.
Yes, sir.
He's running the show these days. Yeah. I mean, we all work for Grocco now.
Yep.
It's a 30-minute show.
Okay.
Okay. We're at 48.
Okay, you keep the logs now,
Colin.
We're overachievers. Oh, I'm going to answer the nitro question first, and then Colin's going to answer.
All right.
Can I just go? Whatever.
Let it rip.
Oh, okay. So one thing, if I could go back to the beginning of real estate and change, I wouldn't sell a house ever. Okay. I wouldn't sell a single house. I would hold on to every single house and not flip them in retail quality. I'd flip them in rental quality, and I keep them. I put tenants in, and I rent them out. You know, I was talking about, you know, there used to be really great margins on the south side, and they're slowly shrinking. Well, even the great margins, you look back at that money, where'd that money go? It went to the next house. It went mm-hmm. back to pay financiers. It went to your bills, this and that. Now we're, you know, as we're getting into multifamily, we're looking at the cash flow that we're getting right. from these properties.
That's why I asked the question right
saying,
out of the gate.
Yeah. So it's
renting.
Like, whoa, we can make that much before we get out of bed.
Yeah.
Wait, what? So every single time we do this, we do 3 or 4 of these a year,
yeah.
you know, scale it up from there. Every door we're making how much money? I would just do that.
Yeah.
And I would focus on, 4-unit apartment buildings. And I would know the neighborhoods now, you know what I know now about the neighborhoods, take a little
right.
bit more time to find those properties and be a little bit more patient in finding those properties. And I just hold on to them, build a portfolio. Without ever selling, without ever flipping.
Yeah. Look, I'm an advocate
to that.
Not that
I don't love flipping.
No, flipping's great.
Yeah.
I'm an advocate to that because I personally, I do have a lot of property on Southside.
Yeah.
Like South Shore, 77th
okay.
and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I've had them for years, and everybody in this room knows that I've bought them in 2013. Really cheap.
Cool.
Rented them forever. And it's now finally time where I'm considering
yeah.
selling them. And what I've found is that area doesn't work like some other areas. It does work. There's great opportunities to do some flips. You get the right property, put just enough money in, and you make a nice hefty profit. It does work. But you can't force that on every single property. Sometimes it's just better to buy it, park it,
mm-hmm.
enough to get good rent from it, and then the time will come when
yeah.
it's ripe, it's ready, if you will,
sure.
to make the next move. So, but that's why I asked earlier. And it's a good way of doing it. And when you mentioned that your coach your mentor was that's his philosophy, I was like, okay, that makes sense.
Can I ask a question, though, now that you're speaking? Because I know your inventory is pretty diverse. I mean, you have condos and houses,
yeah.
and a
yeah.
lot of us focus on 2 flats, right? That's where buyers are kind of
buying
these days.
I'm not picky, but...
So what do you say to that? Like, where should you focus if you're going to hold... I mean, for flipping, or would you consider condo flipping?
I don't consider anything specific to anything. Like, it's hard to explain. I think that every property has its own story and its own potential in its own way. So to tell you, oh, flip all condos is just the stupidest advice I could possibly give somebody. To tell you, rent all 2 units and 3 units. No, I might be able to buy a 2 or 3 unit really cheap and then just do some basic work and still sell it for a fortune. So I think every scenario is its own thing. But I will say this. The one thing that I preached when we talked about the crash and we talked about, you know, are we heading that way again? I don't think we're heading that way again, or we can't possibly go that way again, because there's something missing in today's escalating real estate market that didn't happened in the boom, if you will. In the boom, we were trading real estate like penny stock. We were buying it at X and trying to sell it within 6 months because we're going to make a ton of money. How many condos did you flip like that? Like, literally, you put a contract down on a condo for $300. It hasn't even been sold yet. It's still being developed. And the minute it's ready for his occupancy,
yeah,
we
yeah,
have sold
yeah.
it.
And I got my earnest money back.
But just let me finish.
No.
You had enough
you
time.
You missed
no.
that. You missed that.
No, you missed it because you were blind to it.
You were blind to
but
it.
But don't blame us. So anyways, what would happen is you would literally, the condo would finally be finished. You bought it for $300 under contract, right? Mm-hmm. Put down your 5%, you're going to be the buyer. The condo's finished, it's ready for your occupancy. You're like, I'm not moving in, I'm going to sell it. Someone comes in and buys it for $340. You never took out a loan, did a piece of work, anything. And so people are out there buying new constructions because they're going to be worth 5 or 6 or 10% more in 3 weeks. And that is the speculation that exploded the bubble. Oh, here we go.
I'm sorry.
Here comes some bad advice.
Okay.
Okay.
Why, for the love of God? You haven't had enough time.
No, it's not about that. Is that you're saying, okay, so you're talking about pre-construction purchases, right? Is that
no,
what you're talking
it was
about?
An example.
But it was, you were talking about that.
Every property is different. There's people that were
no.
speculating is what I was saying. People speculated.
No,
and that was an
said.
Example of how people speculated. People would
yeah.
buy any type of property. If you pay attention, you'd understand that I was saying speculation is
a key
word.
But you're saying the reason why we cannot be in this bubble, we cannot
because
be
because speculation
in...
doesn't exist like it used to. Because people aren't trying to buy a house and flip it in 3 weeks like they used to. That's
yes,
what was happening
in 05. What do you call wholesalers?
Not nearly.
Where homes change hands 4 times before they get to the end
You're just
going
to argue, but the reality is a speculative
I'm
buyer
a realtor,
is not around.
So I know what's going on in the market.
Wholesale doesn't even...
Guys, are you buying properties through wholesalers
versus
realtors?
Can you...
Well, look, this is a totally different model.
Dude, this is a totally different conversation.
This is a totally different
people
model
in 2005
that.
Were buying a house from a realtor listed on the market.
I understand that, Nick. But
no,
it's
you're
a,
not then. Because you're talking about wholesalers in the same conversation.
It's the same thing. It's just a different
all
way right. of doing business.
Well, we're talking
business.
About a house that's, with all due respect, we're talking about a house that's uninhabitable. A house that at the end, when we're done flipping it, would be worth $165,000 to $180,000. They're tacking on a $3,000 wholesale fee onto a purchase price of $50,000. That isn't and no bank is going to loan on that house. I think what Nick's talking about is a house that's ready for occupancy that you put under contract, and then 3 weeks later, without even signing a loan, it's already increased by 5 or 10%.
Right.
Yeah. We're talking about a $3,000 fee.
And I
we're
get going, that. You know.
Let me unwind it though. Yeah. I think everyone took a sample and misunderstood what I was saying though. The speculation, people were trading real estate like a stock in 05 because we witnessed it. Mm. We saw so many people coming in to buy a property that had no intention of really holding it, no intention of even renting it. Does that make sense? They had no intention of doing anything. The property didn't even need work in some cases, right? They said, everything's going up 20% in a year, so I'll sell it within 6 months and make my money. Yeah, but man, you're going to pay a $2,000, $2,500 a month payment. Mm. He's like, yeah, but I'm making 40 grand, so I'll eat 12 and make 40. That's what they were doing in 2005. Nobody is doing that today. They're buying these things with a little bit more of a perspective of whole. Real estate isn't meant to be flipped like penny stock. I mean, don't get me wrong. Certain flips do happen. Flipping houses is a big phenomenon right now because there's a lot of great distressed properties still in the debris left over from the crash, if you will. But when people are taking brand new stuff or stuff that doesn't need work and trying to do that same game with like what we would consider a flip where you have to put some elbow grease into it, that's what was happening in 05. That's what happened is a lot of people. I knew a mailman who had 10 houses. He had 10 properties. Let me just give you an example. He had 10 properties. So your mailman has 10 properties, has no intentions of renting them, has no intentions, doesn't have a plan on them. He just knows they're going to be worth more in about 4 or 5 months. He's going to sell them all and make a ton of money because he could do it with no money down. That's what blew that up. Now you can't buy a house, an investment property, no money down. That's one thing that doesn't exist. You have to put some money down. Even if it's owner-occupied, at least 3% is going in it. You were doing investment property loans in 2005 with no money down. Mm-hmm. Just sign here. In fact, you go to closing and end up getting $5,000 or $6,000 back because of the tax credit. So you made a profit, you sign in your name, and then you'll sell it 3 months from now for 10 more percent. Yeah. That doesn't happen in today's market. That's my point.
I tried
you
it.
Can't
in
possibly
recent,
do it.
In recent times, I tried it.
You can't do it. Worst buyer
in
the world.
I was trying to park. I was trying to. The idea was you park earnest money on new construction, on a condo tower that's going to take 2 to 3, 4 years to build out. So if I get in at an early price, call it $300,000, during those 3, 4 years, my $300,000 is going up in value. I would close on the property, and because the programs that existed back in the day were 0% down, I would literally get my earnest money back. And at the same time, I would sell it at a slightly higher price and make a profit. You can't do that today because you have to.
Now there's seasoning laws with financing. If you haven't owned the property at least 3 months, you can't even sell it yet. Because like on FHA financing, if someone's trying to buy one of your properties, but it's shorter than 90 days, they'll make you park it.
Yeah. It's a very comprehensive set of regulations
these are all
that got us
precautions
out of that.
That were not around
but
in 05.
I feel like it's time where they start to.
It'll loosen up.
Even your stated income loan that you mentioned earlier requires 25% down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It required nothing down in 05. That's the difference between a bubble and could there be a slowdown in the market? Sure. But like Colin said earlier, as long as you find the property cheap, you can make money in any market. Grocco was flipping homes in 09 when no one wanted to touch real estate and made a killing on them in 09. So, I mean, you can make money in any market. Like you'll hear famous stockbrokers and traders saying, the market's terrible, but people know how to make money in this market and that market. That should give no one pause as far as trying to buy and sell real estate for a profit. The question is, you can't treat every piece of real estate the same exact way as the last one because they're so different. You might need to buy and hold in some cases, and in some cases you can flip it in three months. Mm-hmm. That's fine. But it's, is there a slowdown? Sure. So what? Let it slow down. Let it go down 10%. There'll still be deals out there.
So let's get to the final Nitro question, which was Colin's.
Colin.
You want to recap it?
You got to let us know what your most embarrassing moment in your acting career was.
Well, it's a toss-up. It's hard to decide. One was...
it's hard to decide, huh?
It's hard to decide.
That's good. You got some good stuff. Now there's two Nitro questions.
Scoring. So I'd gone in for this audition for this film, and It came down between me and these two other guys, and they ended up choosing this other guy, and I was like, bummed because I didn't get it. So then they called me back a week later saying that that other guy went to go do a Steven Spielberg movie, that I needed to come back and audition one more time with the lead actress. And her name was Brooke Langton. She had just done this movie with Keanu Reeves, and I was like, oh, man, she's amazing, awesome. Yeah. So I go to the audition, and I was so nervous, and I was rushing to get there, and I had to go to the bathroom, so I sign in, and casting director was like, all right, Brooke comes out. She's like, all right, cool, nice to meet you, Colin. They're like, okay, we're going to start. I said, all right, I just need to go to the bathroom real quick. Go into the bathroom. And I was in such a rush that, as a guy, sometimes you forget to kind of shake off the excess.
Oh, boy.
And so I did my business and just threw it back in there and zipped it up and realized that.
Wait, what?
She don't understand. She never hit.
You got to shake the dew off the lily.
He peed on his pants.
Keep telling your story. I zip up and realize that I had a little spillage in my pants. Right. And I was like, so I had like gray pants and a big wet spot. They're like expecting me. So I like turn on the air dryer and I'm like sticking my crotch trying to like dry off. And finally I just pulled my shirt out of my pants and I just kind of covered it up and went in there.
Yeah, it doesn't happen to you ever.
Nailed the audition, got the movie. Did you get the, bang.
Got, there you there go. That's all. Ladies
the last
and gentlemen.
One, I was at this Armani party in New York City. George Armani, all these celebrities. And it was at the Armani store. And there's an elevator to come up to the second floor of the store. And there was a dinner. And Martin Scorsese was there. And I go by the elevator to kind of just look out and see what the clothes were. The elevator opens up. And I don't get very starstruck, but out comes one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen in my entire life. She's one of my Hollywood crushes, Kate Blanchett. Walks out.
I love her.
Love her. Love her. She walks out. She looks at me. I look at her. It was love at first sight for me. She was married. And I was like, I couldn't speak. And she was like, party over there. I was like, yeah. That was my bad Australian accent. I was like, yeah, and she looks over at the clothes, and I look over at the clothes, and then she looks back at me, and I go, the only thing that I could find to come out of my face was, so you're from Australia? She looked at me, and she's like,
that happens,
and then
she
turned and walked away, and I was like, no! That's the only thing I could think of at that moment.
And then she told you your pants are wet.
And she told me, okay.
So what did we learn? Colin's game is bad against idols, and he doesn't wear underwear.
That's disgusting. I can't believe it.
All right, we got to wrap, guys. They're kicking us out of the studio.
Oh, okay.
We didn't even get to your Nitro question.
Yeah, we did.
You answered mine first.
Jesus Christ.
Are you on the show?
Bro,
I don't want to argue about the bubble.
Like, are you serious?
Sell everything now.
She missed that.
Oh, I was trolling with our little guest over here. Right.
She's busy. She's running the show. She's got a lot of responsibility,
She's running the show.
She's on the phone is what it is. She's texting.
I have appointments.
I'm sorry. Can you guys introduce yourselves again? And where are you from? How's your stories?
Oh, my God.
Like, oh my God, okay. Wow. My name is Colin Knightsoll. This is Tyler Ragsfield.
Right,
We're
from Hollywood. Let's close out. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. All right, boys.
Can you close us out, somebody, please?
Close us out.
Hey, Grocco, thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you, Grocco.
And I hope
thank
that
you, thank you,
I'm
Nick.
Flying into town on the 22nd on the day of the event. Hopefully I can make it.
All right, brother. I appreciate
thank
it, man.
Thank you, Grocco. Yeah. Thank you, Grocco.
Pleasure to see you, Carla.
Anytime, man. Anytime. All right. Well, you can follow this show and all Market Overdrive shows every Thursday at 5:30 on our Facebook / Market Overdrive. Of course, we're at Twitter. Handle at Market Overdrive. Our YouTube channel has it live, as well as our Facebook page. You can go to our website, marketoverdrive.com. And last but not least, download the podcast at WGN Radio on the WGN Radio family. We will see you back here 1 week from today at 5:30. See you then.